You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Washington to Hollywood and right back to Wisconsin, it's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. Connecting the dots on the stories shaping our world with smart takes, sharp humor, and plenty of personality.
You know, I really expected more professional behavior from you.
It's news and culture without the noise.
Yeah, I'm on!
Here's Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach.
Dude! Just a couple dudes.
Dude!
Welcome, everybody. This is Nightlight, as you just heard. I am Pete Schwabe, and sitting across from me is my partner in crime tonight, the amazingly talented Mr. Greg Bach, and working the board.
Yeah.
Is a guy I like to call Dom Lee. A lot of other people call him different stuff, but he'll always be Dom Lee to me.
Oh, thank
you. You'll always be Dom Lee to me. Don't sue us, Billy Joel.
Welcome to Nightlight. That is Greg. You're a musical guy. Do you sing? Did you ever, when you were in bands, did you sing?
Yes, I was a lead singer, a backup vocalist. I'm sort of a jack of all trades when it comes to a band situation. I like to be able to play whatever is necessary and do whatever is necessary in a band because that's how you get hired.
You got to know everything. Like in radio, I'm amazed. Mm-hmm. Everybody I meet here at Civic Media, like, knows how to run the board. They know how to do this. They know how to fix a tower and they've been on air. I'm like, all right, I got some catching up to do, but either way, it's good.
Tower is falling now, Pete. Go grab it up. I'm just kidding. Engineers, the tower's not falling. Everything's fine.
We don't have a tower. Here's what did fall. Let me get your opinion on this.
Bring it in.
Take a knee. I don't have a running feud with the people that collect my trash every week, but inevitably, every time I go out there, my cans are down on the ground. And my neighbors are still upright.
Okay.
So I feel like they're trying to send me a message. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist. I don't know why they'd be sending me a message. But it's happened, I would say, 4 or 5 times out of the last 10 weeks. What do you make of
that? Well, first of all, never say I have a beef with my garbage people and then don't fall. And then say I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist. Because you will.
Okay.
I would say this. Okay, what day is your trash pickup?
Tuesday.
Do you know about time? You know, is there a regular, like, is it they come in the morning, afternoon?
Well, it varies a little bit, but typically late morning.
Okay. I would do this. I would maybe, if you can remember, because we all got busy lives, maybe on Tuesday, you just sort of pay attention, have some coffee, watch out the window, and see what happens. Because if they're knocking them over, that's an interesting question. If no one else is getting knocked over, see what is it is it how you're presenting them? Is it maybe you're putting stuff in there they don't like? I don't know. I have no idea. Is it the specific placement of the trash bins where they are at your curb? I have no idea. I would say do some real digging on there. I would run an experiment, watch for yourself and see what happens and report back.
You know, here's the thing.
Yeah.
When they damage the can, they give us the cans. And they're not cans. Yeah. They're like the big plastic bins. So I feel like if they're going to beat up my cans for some reason, they're just going to replace them. So I don't put that much into it. I also put a big sticker on the side of each can that says, how's my garbage putting out? Call 1-800-EAT-BLANK.
Really? Or is that a joke?
<That's>, believe you.
Oh, my God. I would never do that.
Well, listen to what we're talking about right now, and then you say you do that. I have every right to be like, really? Okay. All right.
Okay. Fair enough. No, I'm just going to get a ring cam, I think.
Don't get a ring cam. They share stuff with ICE. So,
Do they really?
Okay. Yeah, they do. I mean, that's what my other suggestion was going to be, is just set up a camera for that like couple hours and see what happens. I mean, I feel like it's a big enough thing that you brought it up here to the show. You want to find out more?
Well, listen, I have garbage man. I was a garbage man in the past, a summer job in college. I collected garbage. I smelled bad meat, horrible milk. I see what, you know, I see what happens. I've seen the inner workings. So I have a little bit of respect for these guys, but I feel like if my cans keep taking a beating, there's going to be hell to pay.
Okay, you heard it here, folks. You heard it here first. Pete Schwabe threatening municipal workers in the Marionette area.
They're not municipal workers. It's a private company. Oh, it's private. I would never threaten municipal workers. I have too much respect.
I mean, that's another question you can always bring up, is privatizing that kind of stuff good for the community? I could talk about that for a while, but I'm not going to, because we want to have some fun tonight.
Let's get to it.
And we have such a good show for you ahead today. In this hour, we're talking to Patrick DeHaan, who is the head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy. I love this. I love that we had a talk with him about this, talking about gas prices. And then in the second hour, we're talking to Civic Media's very own Stuart J. Waddles about, you know, his job, what's going on. But he's also bringing us the popcorn pick of the week.
Stuart does an outstanding job covering news for Southeast Wisconsin here at Civic Media. And he's a bit of a, he's kind of turned into kind of a music guy. So I figured this is going to work out well, because our question of the night has to do with music. Stuart will weigh in on that. And then after the news, he'll give us the popcorn pick of the week. It'll be fun. I just want to say I'm very excited to have someone from an actual app on the show tonight.
Which app is that there, Pete?
GasBuddy, Craig.
Oh, I thought you meant... I thought you meant the Civic Media app. We got two people from apps today. Because GasBuddy, yes, a wonderful app. Very, 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 very good. I was trying to think of a better word, but I couldn't. It's good. But also, the Civic Media app. You can hear Stuart J. Waddles on the Civic Media app, because he gives all the news for Southeastern Wisconsin. You can download the app, listen to live shows, talk or music. You can get your news. You can get whatever you need. You can talk to us, call, text, or send a voice message. It's all right there on the Civic Media app. So not only do we have one app, we have two app people on tonight.
It's all about the apps.
It's all about the apps, baby.
Phone lines are always open, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. And I think without further ado, speaking of overrated bands, we need to get to tonight's question of the night.
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
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 Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
Oh, here we go. You ready for this, Greg?
Yeah.
What rock star or band is seriously overrated? What rock star or band is seriously overrated? Let us know. Be part of the show. I just mentioned the text line. You can also text in on the app, or if you're watching the radio on YouTube, Facebook, or X Twitter, you can drop us a stream comment, be part of the fun. And as always, you're welcome to weigh in on anything Greg and I are talking about tonight. We love to hear your opinions. And that goes for you too, Dom.
All right. Yes. I will take that into consideration.
Dom, what are your opinions?
I have no...
Thanks for letting us know. All right, we're moving on now. I'm just kidding.
Dom, where he comes back at you a little bit. That's fantastic.
I mean, he controls the microphones. I have to be nice to him.
He wasn't having it. That's awesome. All right, so we've got some things to talk about, Greg.
We have some things to talk about. Yes, we do.
The first big story.
There's no getting around it. It broke earlier today. Kristi Noem, now the former Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, being let go by the president earlier this afternoon. I'm surprised it happened now versus, say, you know, a couple weeks ago when it was, I feel like, would have been even more, I don't want to say justified, but when they were calling for her to be fired after the shooting deaths of Nicole Good and Alex Preddy. But it just happened today on a Friday. The president tweeted it out on Truth Social that she is going to be gone. She's going out the door. And in her place, Pete,
Mark Wayne Mullins, buddy.
Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen.
Let's talk about him, but first her. This is kind of perplexing. First of all, she might be let go by her husband too, if these rumors are true that senators were bringing up. That was kind of strange. But in this administration, what do you have to do to get fired? It's perplexing to me. Well, I was actually shocked when I saw this.
If you look at everything, this is all AI research really quick. It's an overview, but it's plausible because people have talked about this. So people believe her mishandling of the DHS and all of the things regarding ICE agents, specifically in Minneapolis. She has been lambasted by members of Congress, both on the Republican and the Democratic side, handling money as far as, like, you know, mismanaging this $220 million for an ad campaign, plane controversies, the Corey Lewandowski thing. Everything she has done that people are pointing to has been done by other people, and they're staying in their jobs. And I just want to bring up a point here. Pete Hegseth, who is the Secretary of he is the Secretary of Defense. He spoke about private military plans on a Signal chat with a reporter on there that he invited into the chat and talked about these various, and he kept his job. Like, we're talking about high end problems from a guy who also not qualified to be there in that job. I'm sorry, you were in the military. My dad was in the military. He cannot be the Secretary of Defense. But everything she has done has been done by other people, and yet she's losing her job. I have to imagine it's the scapegoat. She's like, it's a matter of them saying, well, we'll get rid of her. It's fine. Go ahead. And we'll keep doing what we're doing. But I think this might be the beginning of the end for other folks. I don't know what you think, Pete.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is like you said, a scapegoat. And now we let someone go. Now we can just go back to the business as usual. But I was shocked too. But we'll see Trump has other plans for her, apparently moving her to be a special envoy for the Shield of the Americas. We'll see if that happens. But this Mark Wayne Mullen, former MMA fighter, Greg, undefeated. Mm-hmm. So don't even he can take you. He could take me and Dom. He could probably take all three of us.
I mean, he's made threats during testimonies too. He likes to fight. The man believes in fighting to solve problems.
He likes to fight, and he threatened a union guy on the floor of the Senate. And I thought, well, what is it? And he went in like saying there needs to be decorum in MMA. When you hit a guy in the back of the head, you can still hate him, but you shake his hand at the end of the fight. And the Senate has none of that. You know, we backstab all the time. And then he threatens to fight a guy on the floor. And I'm like, what are you going to do? Are you going to go fight every illegal alien? Like, what is your plan?
Well, no. I mean, when it comes to undocumented, he's just going to tell them, arrest them at all costs and just keep doing what you're doing. Just try to be nicer about it. I don't know. But like, Mark Wayne Mullen is a college dropout, not a person who doesn't have a background in this kind of work. He is not, again, not qualified. But here we are. Mark Wayne, one word, one name, Mark Wayne Mullen, as the acting DHS secretary. We'll see if they even put him up for confirmation, because this is what Trump did in his first term, is he fired a bunch of people and made everyone acting so that way he can fire and hire as he sees fit and doesn't have to get confirmation from the Senate.
Genius.
So we'll see what's going on there. But yeah,
Dom Wayne Lee, what do you think about that?
No. Dom Wayne Lee.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. But that was weird, threatening to fight a guy. I'm just like, come on. Like, it's just, there's no place for that, you know? And Bernie Sanders on the video we had was telling him to sit down. He said, sit down, both of you. Like, there was one adult in the room, you know?
I will take away your desserts. No one will get dessert. I believe in some socialist tendencies here. Democratic socialism, but no dessert from anyone if you don't sit down and finish the conversation like adults. That's my Bernie Sanders. I don't even know if it's offensive or not. I have no idea.
How would it be offensive? It was
I don't know. I have no idea.
We've got two more big things to discuss. And
we do it
after a very short break. We're going to read text tonight. We're talking overrated bands. We've got the popcorn pick of the week. There's so much going on here. I can't stand it. This is Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach on Nightlight on the Civic Media Network.
My dudes!
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network. Great to have you here with us on this Thursday night. Greg, I used to call Thursday nights the Christmas Eve of weeknights because it's a glorious weekday, right?
I used to call it Friday Eve. And there was that thing of like, I feel like you feel more as an adult than as a young person. But like when I get home from work tonight, I'll be like, oh, it's basically the weekend. It feels like, you know, it feels nice. I love it. I love Thursday nights. It makes me feel so good. But also I will say this. I have a job here at Civic Media that I truly adore that makes me not feel those Sunday blues that you get around, say, 3 or 4 in the afternoon. You're like, ugh, work tomorrow. I don't do that anymore. It feels really nice.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah.
Very well said. So we've got a couple more things we got to get to here.
Two more stories.
One, if you please.
Big story.
We don't know what number it is. It's just a big story. We're going to roll with it.
This one coming, coming out of Muskego. This has been going on for over a year now. And the story was actually published a little less than a month ago, but I thought it was very much interesting to talk about, which is a Muskego post office chalk case. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but a gentleman named Jim Brownlow was arrested last year for what was going to be criminal damage to property. And essentially what happened was, is he wrote something on the sidewalk in chalk outside of a post office where, you know, it said, remember January 6th every November, you know, availing himself, I believe, of the First Amendment, free speech. Well, over this past year, it's gone from him being arrested for criminal damage to the charges being dropped, then recharged with disorderly conduct, to this past week or past month saying finally, no, he is free to go. He is not guilty of any of those crimes. And he represented himself. And I know it sounds like a little story, but to me, a man being arrested, charged, recharged with a different crime for writing in chalk outside of a U.S. post office, to me, is a very scary thing, because I in no way, shape, or form saw the damage, harm, or how they try to make it seem like inciting possible violence through people seeing this terrible message in chalk.
Right.
But he was found not guilty. He's good to go. Jim Brownlow of Muskego, still able to exercise his free speech here in America.
Middle school librarian wrote in chalk. And these were like the charges, and this is a quote from what they charged him with: engage in violent, abusive, indecent, profane, boisterous, unreasonably loud conduct, or in other disorderly conduct under circumstances in which the conduct tends to cause or provoke disturbance. So here's the thing. He wrote in chalk on the sidewalk, like Greg just said. If you support the fact that January 6th people were pardoned and that they were just tourists and there was nothing terrible that happened, why does this bother you?
Yep.
You know, when people say something that I disagree with, I'm like, yeah, have at it, whatever. But what he's saying, if January 6th was not a crime and you support the pardons, you should be okay saying, remember January 6th. What's the harm? What's the conflict there?
Remember that great day we took a field trip to the Capitol? Oh, man, it was so much fun.
Yeah. They're not saying I disagree with you. They're saying, hey, take that off.
Well,
I
also think that if this would have happened, say, this year, nothing would have happened. I feel like that, you know, when he was charged early last year, there was a lot of still bad vibes, but I just feel like they were really trying to nail people for speaking out. And again, all he wrote was, remember January 6th every November.
Right.
No swears, no cuss words, no dirty pictures he drew. It was those words. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words. And it was a year of his life in the courts because he was simply speaking his mind as protected by the First Amendment. But I think more people should know about this because it's the possibility matter for me. If they can do this to him, who else can they do it to? So that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yep. Well said. And looking at colorful chalk on the sidewalk has never made me want to beat someone up.
Well, don't
write anything.
How does that feel? How's Mark Wayne Mullen feel about chalk? I mean, that's what, you know.
I'm not fighting Mark Wayne
Mullen. Neither am I. You'll win. All right. All right. So in the time we have left, let's get the last story, please, Dom.
The third big story.
Pete, the people have spoken, and what is a chain restaurant doing for them?
Well, the people have spoken because Chick-fil-A changed the formula of their waffle fries.
Yes.
And Chick-fil-A is wonderful and their waffle fries are delicious, but they started putting pea starch in the waffle fries.
PEA, the vegetable.
Yes, we have to clarify.
Yes.
And then I guess it made the fries too crispy or something, and people went nuts, like people do over little things.
What? Wait a minute. Who's complaining about crispy fries? Is that the world we live in now? We're complaining about crispy fries?
People that like soggy fries. I don't know.
I mean,
it doesn't make sense to me, though. Like, first of all, if you can notice the difference, if something's egregious and very different and you can tell, yeah. I get it. But this is like, of all the things to be upset about, you know.
Yeah. They announced that it was a slight adjustment to make the fries, quote, stay crispier longer. That feels like you're doing something for me.
Correct.
But people are, an influencer and fashion entrepreneur expressed disappointment over the change. I don't know. Are their fries going woke? I have no clue. Why is this a bad thing?
The only thing I could think of, and this wasn't mentioned in any of the posts I saw, that it's an ingredient or it's a preservative. And if you don't want preservatives, okay, I get that. I don't know if it's good for you or bad for you. It's pea. Peas are good for you.
Peas Starch, are great.
You could go either way on that one, but I don't know. But I think this is, I have nothing to compare it to. I don't eat a Chick-fil-A enough.
It says, I love soggy fries. Please, we are begging you, someone wrote. That's what we're okay. All right. That's what we're worrying about in this world nowadays. Cool. I don't have the palate enough to tell you when a place changes their fry ingredients.
Maybe we'll try it live on air. How about that? Maybe we do something.
Ooh. Grand.
Dom Wayne Lee, ladies and gentlemen, called the day is long.
Different middle name.
We are coming right back to talk gas prices and Gas Buddy with Patrick DeHaan. This is Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach on Nightlight on the Civic Media Network.
He's self-made. What a clown.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you.
Welcome, welcome back to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach. My name is Greg Bach. Across the way from me is Mr. Pete Schwabba. Dom Lee is in Madison right now on the ones and twos. We are happy that you are joining us. Do not forget, coming up in the second hour, we've got Civic Media's very own Stuart J. Waddles, our colleague, with his popcorn pick. So don't go anywhere. Still plenty of great shows still ahead. But now let us introduce our guest tonight. He is the head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy. Patrick DeHaan is here. Good evening, Patrick. Patrick, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate you being here. Now, I've seen Gas Buddy. I check it for the national averages. What do you do at Gas Buddy, and what does Gas Buddy do as a company for just consumers?
Yeah, I'll start there. Gas Buddy is a company for consumers, tracks gas prices across all 50 states and into Canada as well at 150,000 different gas stations, kind of like the Yelp for gas stations. We help you find the cheapest gas through our payments card, through our app, through multiple different ways to earn rebates and rewards through the app, card link offers, basically just trying to help you save on your everyday life, whether that's road tripping or going to work, finding gas at a lower price.
I use it as well, and I have to admit, I probably use more gas finding a station that is 3 cents cheaper for my Land Cruiser. So I don't know that I've totally figured that out. But we bombed Iran a few days ago, and there's this, I think, misconception, and I only know this because that's what I read, but that the president directly affects gas prices. They said this during Joe Biden's term, Donald Trump's term. As I understand it, the president isn't responsible for gas prices. Who is? What goes into that? And do the presidents, can they affect it one way or the other?
Well, I think this is trying to make something that's really complex really simple. And ultimately, analysts like myself do try to say things like the president has very little control on gas prices. That's showing a status quo. It's kind of rare to see a president going in with military action, though. And so, you know, a caveat would being, obviously, and there are a few caveats, not just military action, but going into a country, an oil producer, especially one like Iran, and not so much Iran's crude oil, but where Iran is geographically, right on the side of the Strait of Hormuz, which is a vital waterway. I mean, it comes back to, if the president hadn't done this in the Middle East, would this reaction be happening? And so to your point, on a daily basis, the president does not have a role in global supply and demand and the balances. Now, having said that, the exception is if the president does something and makes a choice that then impacts the global oil market in a meaningful way, right? War is not necessarily typical day in and day out, or attacks on a Middle Eastern country aren't exactly normal. So that's where the caveat does come into play. On a daily basis, though, all things equal, the president doesn't have a whole lot of control, but he also made a military action here against Iran that's now having collateral damage.
When you're looking at your information on a daily basis, what is, you know, you said you're taking in consideration you said over 150,000 gas stations around the country, but from like a global research standpoint for you, what you're seeing, what do you take into consideration as part of your research as the petroleum analysis?
You know, I'll try to simplify it. Anything that has any impact on supply and demand, anything that can shape either one of those narratives, things like COVID when demand plummets, they're unexpected, they happen, they have to be taken into consideration. We have the normal ebbs and flows of supply and demand, right? Seasonal increases in demand. You have things like supply, OPEC, US oil production, Canadian oil production. So those are kind of the things that fluctuate on a daily basis. The state of the global economy, whether or not global economies are improving or slowing down, all those things. But essentially all of those touch supply or demand. It's kind of like a scale, and it can tip, and that's when prices go up or down, is when that scale tips.
You recently said that because of what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz and in Iran, that 20 to 25% of the world's crude oil is just sitting there. How long can that go on before we're looking at $8 prices at the pump? And is that even a possibility?
Well, I wouldn't think it's a possibility, but every day I wouldn't have thought, you know, I mean, the president had talked about Iran. I wouldn't have necessarily known that that was going to be a reality either. So I don't have a crystal ball, but I wouldn't think that the president, who's been all about drill, baby, drill and low gas prices. I mean, the State of the Union, right, was a little over a week ago and he was touting the cheap gasoline, and now we're seeing the opposite. So my read is that the president has been very pro energy, very pro low prices. Why, you know, I can't think that he would deviate or allow or continue to not do anything about this escalating situation in the Middle East. I would think he would pay attention to it. And he already did. I think the other day he mentioned the possibility of military escorts through the Strait of Hormuz, because word is getting to the president that we need to build confidence in ships transiting the Strait of Hormuz to allow them to do that, because right now it's essentially cut off, not necessarily because there's a door on the Strait of Hormuz that Iran is opening and closing, but it's the threat of attacks that we've already seen happen, right? Iran is launching a lot of missiles at a lot of different places, and it really is much more risky now. Iran could attack a vessel with $100, $200 million of oil on it in the Strait of Hormuz.
I want to go back to something you just said, but before I do that, I want to reintroduce you. If you're just joining us here on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach, we are speaking with Patrick DeHaan, who is the head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy. And you mentioned a phrase that's been said for a long time now, which is drill, baby, drill. And from what I have learned is that that statement is very much a great thing to say at a podium on the stump speech. But really, the reality of drill, baby, drill is something vastly different, at least in this country, as far as how much we're drilling, how much we're exporting versus importing. They want to give this idea that we are bereft of oil, both import and export, when that's not the fact at all, correct?
Yeah, correct. Absolutely. And also the implication is that the president has some control in that. Mm-hmm. We have a free market. We are vastly different than oil producing countries like Saudi Arabia, you know, Iran, Iraq. All of that is state controlled. That is, they open the spigot, they close the spigot as a matter of policy, because those countries rely on those revenues. In the U.S., oil companies make that decision based on economics. Is oil high enough? Okay, let's invest, let's drill more. Is it not? Okay, let's not invest, let's not drill as much. So, you know, the implication that drill, baby, drill's up to a president, you know, he can deregulate, he can loosen the guardrails, but the president has no control in saying, hey, ExxonMobil, hey, Shell, drill more. There's no control there.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks gas prices are historically high right now. And I read something recently that said they really haven't changed that much in almost 20 years. Why do we think they are? And is that true?
You know, I'd almost say the flip side, they're almost historically very affordable. And mm-hmm. I've actually done the calculations on income, because that's where the pinch comes, is when Americans start spending more than about 3% of their income on gasoline. That's when you start see people getting out the bicycles, because it adds up quickly. Right now, in recent months, Americans have been spending as little as about 2% of their income on gasoline. While the price has started with a 3, although in recent months it's fallen to a 2, mm-hmm. it's taking up almost a historically insignificant amount of income to fill your tank up. And that's why a lot of Americans complain when we hit $3 and $4. But that's also the reason we hit $5 back in 2022, because even at $5, you didn't see Americans spending the percentage of income on gasoline as you did in 2008. In 2008, that percent was like 4%. That's when people started getting mass transit and bikes, because that's the real measure, is percentage of income that you spend at the pump. It's not what it starts with. I'd love for Coca-Cola to be 69 cents a 2 liter, right? Like it was 30 years ago, but proportionately, yeah. What does it actually cost you?
Well, and that's the other question too I wanted to ask, as far as, you know, I understand the point. We as America, everybody wants to pay less for things. And the gas pump is always one of the first places we talk about prices being lowered. But if, let's say, tomorrow, gas prices on the average on Gas Buddy went to $1.75 nationally, that spells disaster for the oil business as well, because the oil prices go down, and that affects how and what they are drilling. Am I correct? Like, low gas prices do not mean victory for everyone, correct?
No, it means a long-term loss. We should be very careful what we cheer for, because look at COVID. Oil production fell in half overnight. Why? Because oil was trading so weak. So the thing is finding that balance. It's so hard to ride that line. It's like a tightrope, where prices are high enough that it justifies oil companies spending and reinvesting, right? But not too high that it restricts Americans from driving. Because to your point, if oil prices are too low, oil companies aren't going to raise production. They're not going to reinvest and bring new oil production online. So, you know, it's a happy medium. Oil prices at about 70, 75, kind of right where they are today, would be good for oil companies. They'd reinvest, they'd have enough money to reinvest, and it'd still be relatively affordable for Americans. But yeah, to your point, $1.50 gas, you know, enjoy it for a month, because a year or two down years down the road, that would spell doom for U.S. oil production.
What happens when, like, I live in a small town in Wisconsin, and there are times I see one gas station has, let's say, a $2.50 a gallon, and then you go a block away and it's $2.80. How does that, is that up to the individual service stations or oil companies? What's the discrepancy there? I've never understood that.
Yeah, a lot of it is competition. In some areas of the Midwest, there are kind of these funny games stations play. I call it price cycling, where stations always want to have the lowest price. Mm-hmm. So they undercut for days at a time, lowering prices more and more. But there comes a point where you can't lower prices anymore, and it's not sustainable. So oftentimes what happens when stations do this, they then restore or they cycle their price back up. You know, to your point, one of those stations, if one's at 280, one's at 250, that can happen normally. But what I'm also thinking is that might have been a cycle where one station quit the game, they re-raised prices to 280. The other station maybe hadn't checked what their competitor was at yet. But those instances can happen, because today, for example, if a station bought gasoline this morning, they paid about 15 cents less a gallon for it than the person buying it later tonight. Now, that's historically a very volatile market right now, so that's not normal. But yeah, I mean, a lot of that is up to the station with some measure of discretion. Sometimes stations have no say. Sometimes when prices are actively falling, they have a lot more discretion.
All right. I was going to say, we have about a minute left, I would say, Patrick, and thank you again for your time. This is really fascinating to me. You said that Americans will spend more than $900 million on gas than they did a week ago. How does that affect, will we stop buying gas? Like, is that a trend? Like, do Americans just drive less when that's the case? Because that's a cumulative number.
Yeah. Gasoline demand is pretty inelastic. The reason we mention that is because instead of, you know, Americans having money they can inject into the economy elsewhere, they're going to be spending more of it at the pump. And that's what is a bit of a warning sign for the economy. That's really the only metric and eye that's useful for that is instead of that $90 million today going into other areas of the economy, QSR, fast food, entertainment, it's going to be going to oil companies. And that's something that is maybe a warning sign.
Great stuff. Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy. We will keep looking at Gas Buddy like we do every day. Thank you so much for your time today and keep up the great work.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. We are coming right back. We're going to do a very short break here, and then Greg and I will be back to, well, you're just going to have to tune in and find out because we've got big surprises. Ice cream sandwiches. It's Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach on Nightlight on the Civic Media Network. That's a start. Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach. My name is Greg Bach, and Pete is currently indisposed, but I'm here with you right now with Dom Lee in Madison. We are here on the Civic Media Network. You can give a call or text 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream. We are currently streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform we still call Twitter. Still ahead in the second hour, we're going to be talking to Civic Media's very own Stuart J. Waddles. He's our Southeastern news reporter, always getting the great news here for us folks here and down where I'm at. I'm in Radio Park here in Racine. But he'll be coming on in the second hour, giving his popcorn picks, as well as probably talking about bands that he may think are overrated, because that is the question of the night. What rock star or band is seriously overrated? You can drop a comment on the live stream. You can put, you can text us either through your phone or through the Civic Media app. We are here for you. Are we here for the people, Pete?
We are here for the people. I am here for the people now. I got my, I'm here for the people. And we got, we have an offer from our pal Mike Clemens to jump on for a few minutes and talk about Bob Harlan if we want to do that. So maybe we should do that at some point.
Is he on right now?
He can be. Would you like him to be?
Sure. Let's tell him to give us a call right this very, very moment.
All right. We will talk about Bob
because
Harlan.
We were going to talk about that just the three of us, but Mike Clemens is our sports reporter here at Civic Media, talking about the announcement from the Green Bay Packers and the Harlan family that former Green Bay Packer president and CEO Bob Harlan has passed away today following a brief illness. He was 89 years old. And Bob Harlan, I mean, we'll get more from Mike in a moment, but he was a legend. He was a god figure in Green Bay sports.
I just texted you his number, Dom. Why don't you give him a call and we'll it's a landline and we'll bring Mike on. Yeah, he was, they won a Super Bowl or two under him.
I think they won two Super Bowls under him. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I know stuff about sports. He took the reins in 1999 and he retired in 2008. So he had one because they won that second Super Bowl in my lifetime,
right
back in 2010 or 11, and that was the third time I'd seen them go to the Super Bowl. Because I remember I grew up in the 80s. Those were dark, dark days.
He's the one, I want to say, Greg, is responsible for finding Brett Favre as well and bringing him up here from the...
Forgiven. I guess. I'm just kidding. All right, do we have Mr. Mike Clemens on the phone right now?
Fantastic.
Joining us right now is Civic Media's very own sports reporter all over the globe, Mr. Mike Clemens. Good evening, Mike. How are you today?
Hi, Greg, Pete. Sad to hear the passing of Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for reaching out, Mike. This was great, and it's great to have a guy on the show here who really knew about Bob Harlan and his legacy. What can you tell us about him? We were just talking about how he brought Brett Favre to Green Bay, I believe. Is that correct?
He brought a lot to Green Bay. Bob was from the Wauwatosa area in Milwaukee. And he started out at Marquette working in the PR department, and then he went to the St. Louis Cardinals in the 1960s, working in PR. The last time I saw Bob, he came to a training camp practice, and we had this wonderful conversation about those Cardinals teams, which Euchre was on there for a couple of years, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
But in 1967, I said, what was Bob Gibson like? Mm-hmm. Bob Gibson was this great fastball pitcher of the 66-67 Cardinals, right? And a Hall of Famer and all that, but just this, you know, mean, nasty. Well, I'm six or seven then, and I had his baseball card, but he's kind of a legend. He goes, he was an ornery dude. He was not a nice man. And, you know, I had to figure out a way to go between him and the manager and say, you know, he's such a star for us, but he's got to lighten up, because when he went on the mound, he was an angry guy. That's the kind of guy that Bob was. I mean, he got it. And eventually he became a part of the Packers staff. And then when the Packers realized they needed to do less of this committee and have a stronger president, he took over as president of the Packers. Well, he makes this brilliant move to bring in Ron Wolf as a general manager, who moves on from Lindy Infante, hires Holmgren, and says, I've got this quarterback down in Atlanta that's currently riding in the bench of the Falcons. We need to bring him in. So the Favre and the Holmgren and Reggie White era comes in the 90s, and you know they rebuild the respect of the team and make them a winning team and win that Super Bowl. And then, you know, he makes the tough decision to move on from Mike Sherman years later and hire Ted Thompson. And they get that second Super Bowl under Mike McCarthy and the move for Aaron Rodgers and to move on from Favre and all those kinds of things. The other thing that he did was so important was he realized, sitting down with all the other owners, that if Green Bay's not careful, they're going to fall way behind. So he had to go to the state and ask, you know, for the state to help out in terms of stadium expansion about 2002, 2003 or so for. And frankly, that little media office I've got in the stadium, you give credit to Bob Harlan, because he took care of us in the media. And he was also famous for when you called the front door desk at the Green Bay Packers and said, Bob Harlan, they'd say, one moment, and he'd pick up the phone, Bob Harlan. It went straight to him.
There was no filters. Wow,
he's a tremendous guy that way.
I'm sure we're going to be hearing even more about him over the next few days. I mean, it's a huge loss to the Packer organization, the Packer family, and from what it seems, the family is stunned by, too, is a brief illness. But you are listening to Mike Clemens, who is Civic Media sports reporter, talking about the passing of Bob Harlan, former president and CEO of the organization. I mean, I'm sure you have story after story, Mike.
Yeah, you know, and let's not forget, too, his son is Kevin Harlan. Kevin is one of the best broadcasters, a play-by-play.
He's great.
Kevin still lives in the Appleton area. I got to see him at the last Super Bowl, you know, check in with him. And he actually called the Super Bowl now on the radio side for West One. He's done it for like the last 15 years. So, yeah, if you will, that's a bit of a legacy for his dad. But, yeah, is his dad set the tone? And it got a little more corporate, you know, during the Mark McCarthy era. But, you know, that guy set the tone on how to be firm and do the best, but at the same time, keep the doors open to the fans.
Thank you so much, Mike, for calling. We really appreciate you checking in with us, giving us a brief overview. Like I said, more talk about Bob Harlan throughout the days. That was Mike Clemens, Civic Media sports reporter here. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we'll be talking about the question of the day. We'll also be talking about popcorn picks with Stuart J. Waddles. Don't go anywhere. You're listening on the Civic Media Network. Stay tuned. Stay close.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.